Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shodell, and I'm here with co-host, producer, and dear friend, Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning, Tom. Thanksgiving is fast approaching.
I can tell because so is the cold weather. The cold weather is fast approaching. You know, I was up in Boston the other day, and I was up there Monday. And it was nice. It was like 60 degrees, you know, walking around. It was really cool. I got up the next morning, Tuesday morning, it was like in the 30s. It was really cold, you know. I think the snap is supposed to end this week. I think, you know, it's supposed to get a little warmer. But I don't know. It's just see fall leaving and winter coming. And I don't know. I don't get depressed, but I get down a little bit, you know, because I'm really a warm weather guy. So have you been to Boston recently?
That's an interesting question. So today marks about my 26th day in radio. Excuse me. 26th year.
Really?
Yes. And somehow, some way, when I started radio in 1999, my first year was November through December.
Mm-hmm.
And then the year 2000 was my first full year.
Okay.
And by the grace of God, I was the number one salesperson.
Really?
For the radio station.
For you.
And our corporate ownership was located up in Boston.
Yeah.
And they sent me up to Boston for an award ceremony.
Oh, wow.
And I spent, I guess, a weekend up in Boston, and it was great. I just, like a real tourist, I took the duck tour and stuff.
Yeah, the duck truck.
And, so
did you walk the Paul Revere's path and all of that?
Some of that stuff, I you know, me being me, it was a lot about food.
Yeah, what? Of course.
And I always, we talk about it sometimes, you know, dining by yourself and stuff.
Yeah.
I have no issues with it.
Me either.
But I checked out all the different restaurants, as many as I could check out. But mm-hmm. I went to, what's the big marketplace?
Market? Quincy. Faneuil Hall?
Yeah. So.
I usually stay right there when I'm up there. I've stayed in the Bostonian Hotel, and I've stayed in, what's the one, Parker House? And what's the other one? It's across town. It used to be, Liberty. Liberty. It used to be a prison, and they converted this prison into a hotel, which is kind of cool. But Boston, there's something about it. I don't know. You know, I get these feelings sometimes. I remember the first time I went to Montauk, I felt like I really belonged there. And about 8 or 9 years later, I wound up with a restaurant there. It was kind of weird. It's the same thing with Boston. I don't plan on opening any restaurants in Boston very soon. But there's something about it. I don't know if it's a past life connection or what's going on. But I always felt pulled to Boston for some reason. And I go there a couple of times a year, and generally what I do is, for those of you who don't know the show and my unhinged ravings here, is that I take a couple of like little quickie vacations every year for a day or two, and I'll go to a different city. I'll go to, you know, Boston. I go there probably more frequently than any other, you know, but I'll go to Philly or I'll go to D.C. or something like that, and I'll eat out, you know, in like four restaurants a night, and I'll have an appetizer and a glass of wine in each one, or two apps and a glass of wine or whatever. And for me, it's fun. It's kind of, because there's nothing I like better than going out to eat still after all these years and all the time I've spent in restaurants. It's still the most fun for me. And, you know, I'm always looking for inspiration, what other people are doing with certain foodstuffs and how they handle it. And so Val and I went up, like I said, we got up there Monday around 3 o'clock, I guess, something like that. It was amazing because I ran into a traffic jam on the LIE, you know.
Really?
And It was brutal because it cost me about a half an hour, 40 minutes. And I didn't think we were going to make the ferry. I always take the ferry out of Orient because I don't like to drive. And turns out we made it by like 3 or 4 minutes. It was very, very cool. So we got up there, you know, at 2:30, 3 o'clock, whatever it was. Anyway, decided to, bang around. So we marked off 4 restaurants that we want to go to. Val being Greek, we have to go to at least 1 Greek restaurant. Otherwise, she's not satisfied. And so we went to this new place, Kaia, K-A-I-A, which is in the South End. And a really sharp-looking restaurant. And it's, I mentioned to her, it reminded me of Skara, where Dino just opened up in East Williston. You know, the Greeks tend to do that blue and white thing and in the decor. And I think it has to do with the reflection of the sea and those very white houses you have in Santorini or whatever. We've all seen pictures of those. Anyway, it was like that on the inside. It was really, really well done, tastefully done. It wasn't done with, the blue or white tablecloth with the blue napkin like you have in some of these other places. It was really tastefully done. And they had a round bar. They had an open kitchen. It was kind of cool. Menu was wild, and they had some interesting things, right? So I was reading the menu in the hotel room, and it said they had the grape leaves that the Greeks do all the time. They usually stuff with rice, some kind of a flavored rice. These grape leaves were stuffed with foie gras, which was interesting, and anchovy. So I'm reading this ingredients list, and I'm going, foie gras and anchovies to me is like, apples and hand grenades. I mean, it just doesn't go together, I don't think, But as I'm looking at it, I'm saying, we're going to have to order it because maybe he knows something I don't know, and maybe there is some kind of, flavor connection there. Anyway, we had it and it was awful, just like I thought, and no reflection on the restaurant, just the combination didn't work. I mean, I pushed the anchovy to the side and I ate the foie gras, but the grape leaves were kind of, they had like a soury kind of taste and not bad, just they had a vinegar kind of thing going on, which kind of beat up the foie gras a little bit. I thought it was an ill-conceived thing. And then we had something else. Oh, we had these, the chips that the Greek restaurants always have, the zucchini and chips. And they were really done well. They had, they were almost souffled. Like, you can do that with potatoes if you fry them twice and they'll puff up, It was the same thing. And the batter was really like a tempura batter. It was really kind of well executed. It was very crisp but they had like tzatziki powder on there. They dried it out and made a powder out of it. But then they had like a caramel on there, like a sweetness, which I thought kind of, screwed the whole thing up. And this is a very high-end place. And the food is really well thought out. I mean, he's got great ingredients and stuff. There's just some combinations that, I don't know, to me didn't really work. So that was stop number one. We had a wine, it's called Aidani, A-I-D-A-N-A. It's a white grape from Greece, which was really interesting and kind of fun. I liked that a lot. We wound up having a glass and a half each of that. I think Val had a Syrtiko also. And a Syrtiko is one of those Greek grapes that, everybody kind of pours. It's a very, very interesting white when it's done well. So the second stop was a place called Uni. Now, Uni's an interesting place because it's in the Elliott Hotel in Back Bay, and it's owned by a man named Ken Oringer, who's the chef/owner, who's a very talented guy. He's got a bunch of restaurants in Boston. He's got Toro, he's got Copa, he's got Little Donkey, Faccia Faccia, and there's a wine bar in the Faccia Faccia called, I think, Palaro or something like that. Anyway, he's an extremely talented guy, and he had a restaurant in the Elliott Hotel called Cleo, which was a very upscale American, kind of very interesting food. I was a big fan of his. And he had this little downstairs sushi bar called Uni, which was the inspiration for me to do, in Jewel Air, Beju. It was kind of like a restaurant within a restaurant. I said, wow, what a cool idea.
That was a cool idea.
Yeah, so I kind of adopted that one over here. Anyway, so it turned out that I guess he kind of saw the light early on that the big expensive restaurants weren't doing as well as they had before. And he went a different way. In Toro, he does all tapas, Spanish tapas, and Little Donkey does street food. So he's kind of changed his thing up, and he decided to do the entire restaurant was uni. So he did this Japanese restaurant slash sushi bar, and he converted the upstairs to that also. And his food is very, very good. It was like I think I was saying last week that the last three sushi places that I've absolutely loved are all run by Americans, which is kind of
odd. That's very strange.
Yeah, it is. It's nuts. And I hope Yama doesn't listen to this show because he'll, you know, slice me when I go to, you know, to work. Anyway, he's got a dish that he does. It's like a little pieces of sashimi tuna with foie gras on top and caviar. And he uses like a little bit of Asian pear on there, one little salmon roe. And he does this aji amarillo sauce, which is really, really good. I just love the dish. I think it's one of the classic sushi pairings I've ever had in my life. It's fabulous. And every time I go to Boston, I stop in there and get at least one of those, right? So we had that. And then they were out of the second thing. I was looking for kompachi. They had a kompachi crudo. And the guy came over and said, oh, we're out of kompachi. I said, all right, well, let's find something else. So they had a dish that had blowfish tails on there. And I don't know if you've ever had blowfish tails, Stu, but yeah, ma'am.
The only thing I've had is goldfish, but they're crackers.
Oh, yeah, no. These are softer. So they have the little blowfish, and they're kind of an East Coast thing. You know, I used to fish for them when I was a kid. We'd catch them in Bayville or whatever. And so they have blowfish up there and have this tail, and it's just
blowfish.
Blowfish. Yeah.
I thought you said goldfish.
Goldfish. No. They don't serve any goldfish there. So the blowfish tails, they're the size of your middle finger, maybe, you know, at length, and then they have this meat around this little bone in the center. But they're really interesting, and they're only around usually in the fall. So he had blowfish tails, and he had them with pureed black garlic, which is kind of fun. It has a little sweetness to it. And he had a golden buffalo sauce on there. So I'm like, I wonder what that's about. Well, I think Val tasted it first, and she was cursing and carrying on. She goes, you can't believe how hot this is. And I like spicy food, you know, I mean, to some degree. So I took a little on the fork, and I tasted the sauce. Stu, it was like somebody set a Bic lighter in your mouth and sewed your lip shut. It was unbelievably hot, you know. It was like, what's the pepper? Scotch bonnet hot, you know, crazy hot. I mean, and it went on for days. I mean, it just, you couldn't get rid of it. You're looking for the yogurt, you know. And I'm like, I don't know. This is, you know, this is a bad judgment on somebody's part in the kitchen because I can't believe that the owner would want something that hot on a plate. It destroys everything after it, you know. You couldn't taste the blowfish. You couldn't taste, I had sake. You couldn't taste the sake, you know. The next day, you couldn't taste your toothpaste. I mean, it was unbelievable. You know? I mean, get me to the smoking section quick, you know. Anyway, so we had those two there. And then we went to a new place. There's a woman up there. There were two women up in Boston that I had, actually three, that I have a tremendous amount of respect for. Three chefs. One is Jody Adams, and she was kind of had these Italian kind of places. The other one is Lydia Shire. And she has a place called, it begins with an S. Anyway, I'll think of it, in the Liberty Hotel. And the third one was Barbara Lynch. And she just closed all her restaurants. She had Montan, and she had one of my favorites, Number 9 Park and B&G Oyster. She had a whole thing going on up there. But then there was a lawsuit, some kind of lawsuit. She got herself into a little bit of a bind or whatever. And she wound up closing all the restaurants, which is really sad because she's a very talented woman. But anyway, so this woman, Jody Adams, she got some kind of deal in the Raffles Hotel there and opened up this place called La Padrona, which is Godmother in Italian. And you got to see this thing. They must have spent, I'm guessing, $7-9 million on the renovation. The place is just phenomenally gorgeous. I mean, it's not my personal taste, but a lot of dark wood and, you know, lighting is beautiful. You got floor-to-ceiling windows overlooking, I think it's Calm Avenue or Newberry Street. I'm not sure which one. Anyway, the place is drop-dead gorgeous. And what they had was, they actually had a bread menu, Stu, where you had different kinds of breads that you could order. They had a cacio pepe focaccia, which I saw come. We ate at the bar. There was a couple next to us, and they had that. It's way too much for two people. I mean, if you had a table of six, it's a great idea. They had a spoon bread, a chickpea spoon bread on there. I'm trying to think of what else. I think there was a sourdough thing. But they had a whole bread menu, which I said, wow, that's a pretty cool idea, you know. Although I don't think on Long Island you can get away with that. You can't charge for bread on Long Island. You can do that in a city. But out here, somebody looking at you like you're nuts, you know. Anyway, we had they had a fazzoletti, which is a type of cut of pasta with rabbit and some other, I don't remember the preps exactly, but I really like rabbit pastas. I think they're great, right? And of course, they're out of the rabbit pasta, just my luck. So we had a bottle, we ordered a bottle of, I had two sommeliers come over and ask me if I needed help with the menu, which is, I get that a lot because I look more like I look more like an outlaw biker than I look like a wine guy. But I was really perusing the list because the list was phenomenal, right? So I wound up getting a reserve Gruner Veltliner from Austria, which was killer. It was Ebenauer. Ebenauer was the producer. If anybody ever goes looking for a great Gruner Veltliner, Ebenauer is the one to get and get the reserve. We had the reserve 18. It was great. So we were just going to split a pasta because we had gone to two restaurants already. They're out of the rabbit. I couldn't find anything else I really wanted. So we wound up having a bunch of appetizers. We had a tuna crudo, which was really great. Tuna was fresh as a daisy. It had, some orange segments on it, some fennel, classic Italian flavors. But they put it on a little round of potato, which I really didn't understand because it didn't really make a lot of sense with the dish. But the dish was great. And then they had this roasted pepper thing where they roasted these baby peppers, and they had some anchovies on there. They had a tuna sauce, a tonnato underneath, and that was real good. I'm trying to think of the third. Oh, we had a prosciutto and fig crostini, which was nice also. I mean, the prosciutto was freshly cut and the color was right. The figs were great. You know, they had two types of figs. They had the green and the black mission. So we were supposed to go to another one after that. We were going to go to La Sorolina, which is my favorite restaurant in Boston at the moment. And, we just ran out of gas. It was like 9:30 by that time, 9:45, something like that. And, how much can you eat? It's at the end of the day, we wound up having 7, 8, 9 appetizers or whatever. It was plenty. But I just love Boston. I love the feel up there. The restaurants are great. People are fun. So the next day, we were going to go back to the ferry, because I take that Orient Point ferry and come back through the North Fork. And we decided to go to New Haven for pizza. So
really?
Yeah. So we drove down to New Haven, and we went to Sally's. And I always preferred Sally's to Don Pepe, Frank Pepe. I'm sorry, Frank Pepe's. They're on the same block on Worcester Street there. It's right off the 95. It's a few blocks off 95 if you ever want to go up there. It's an easy trip. And, New Haven Pizza is famous for its style or whatever. And so it had a real short, we got there around 2:30 or so. It was a real short line at Sally's. So we got in Sally's and finally ordered the mozzarella and tomato pie. And I got to tell you, it wasn't good. I was looking so forward to this. And we get the pie, and it was very little mozzarella. It was actually burnt. It was way overcooked, It was like eating a matzo with tomato sauce on it, burnt tomato sauce. It really wasn't good at all. I was shocked because Sally's gets big, big reviews. And I've eaten there, 100 times, and it's always been great. Maybe not 100, maybe 3. But it's always been really good. And it wasn't. It was such a disappointment that we decided that we're going to have dinner, right?
Wow.
So we jump on the Port Jeff ferry, which was a real adventure on Tuesday night because the wind was howling. It was blowing the ferry all over the place. It was rocking and stuff. It was the roughest ferry ride I've had, really, in all the years I've been going. And then we landed in Stony Brook, and we went to Luca. It's an Italian restaurant that used to be Pentimento up in Stony Brook. Real nice place. I think it's a Tonio's restaurant. I think John Tonio's it. Anyway, they did a good job. They hired a great chef, and his food's real good. I had a couple of really stellar pastas there first time I was there. So we went because they have a rabbit pasta, and I've been craving rabbit for 2 days, right? So we get there, and the great part about Luca is they serve half portions or full portions of the pasta, which is kind of cool, especially after you've eaten, in the last 2 days, I just ate everything in sight.
Cheap Stew looks at that, and is it a half portion, half the price, or a full portion?
I think so. I wasn't paying too much attention because I'm not Cheap Stew. But
usually it's like 75%.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't pay attention. I just liked the fact that it was a smaller portion because we decided to split three of them, right? So we had a kind of a like a ravioli that was stuffed with caboclo squash, you know, and it had some pepitas on it, some pumpkin seeds and a little pear or apple. I'm not sure which one it was. We got a brown butter sauce. It was very good. Liked it. Liked it a lot. And then we had the rabbit, and the rabbit has I call it feta. It was a rabbit pasta. It was pacchieri, which is kind of a big, rigatoni, with had duck in it. Had rabbit in it. Had capers, some feta cheese. I think it had some kind of a tomato product. It was a light tomato broth. Anyway, it was stellar. It was really good, you know. And then we had the third one was an agnolotti, a squid ink agnolotti, and some kind of saffron sauce with a Calabrian chili oil and. Yeah, it was stuffed with shrimp, I think. Yeah. And that was kind of okay. It wasn't my favorite, but, you know, I respect the effort. They're making it there, which is great, you know. So if you get a chance, I haven't really gotten past the pastas. At Luca, I've been there twice, and we've had pasta both times. But check it out. It's a really cool little restaurant, and the bartender's a real friendly guy, you know, let you taste any wine you want. Good things there, real good things there. So if you get a chance, if you're in Stony Brook, stop in there and say hello. There's some real good restaurants up that way now. You know, you got Trattoria, which is one of my all-time favorites. Stephen Gallagher's the chef there, and the owner. He's great talent, good kid. Yeah, they have a bunch of them there. Pietro's is open up there now. The old, in the hotel there. What's the name of that? It was Guy's place. It was Mirabelle. You know, Mirabelle's
still right, up there. Right.
Yeah,
right.
So... Yeah, Stony Brook's kind of a cool place. And they have that one little wine bar there. I guess it's in Setauket. Is Mondrian. Mondrian, real interesting little wine bar. So if you're up that way, you know, visit those people and give them some business. It's always nice to support the locals.
So when you were talking about Boston and the different hotels, it came to me. I stayed at, I don't know if you say Copley or Copley,
yeah,
but
Copley
Plaza, yeah. Which is an old-time.
Very old.
Hotel. It's like the Waldorf would be in New York City,
yeah, exactly,
I believe.
Exactly.
And I stayed there, and it's funny, only because you brought the name up last week when we were chatting, but Dave Widmer was my boss at the time.
Uh-huh.
And Dave offered to take me out to dinner one night. You know, again, I was being celebrated as the top salesperson.
Guy, right.
So I believe there was a Ruth's Chris or Morton's, one of those
steakhouse,
or maybe even the Palm restaurant across the street.
It's probably one of each.
And Dave, being a connoisseur of food, he ordered everything on the menu. Yeah. Like there's a new show on TV with a wrestler, and he goes into different towns, and he orders everything on the menu.
Yeah, I've seen that advertised.
Well, Dave really ordered everything on the menu.
Yeah. Yeah, if it's Morton's, that'll get you a mortgage payment, you know. Yeah, I like the steakhouses for what they are, as far as, you know, the decor, and they're usually done well, and they usually buy great ingredients, and they usually execute pretty well. I'm just not a steak guy. I'm the guy that's having the tuna or the salmon, or the appetizers. You know, when I go away with my friend Dave, we go to play golf once a year down south, and you know, for 8 days. And, you know, we have to go to a steakhouse at least once or twice on the trip because he's a steak guy. And, you know, I don't know. I just once in a while I'll get one. And I'm always, like, sorry afterwards because I'm, like, laying on the couch moaning after that. You know, I'm just not used to digesting that kind of volume of beef. You know, it's just not my thing. I'd much rather have the tuna. But they do a good job. I mean, you know, look at the steakhouses. You know, I think I always refer to them as gourmet restaurants for people who know nothing about food. So they'll go and they'll have a shrimp cocktail and a steak and, you know, a bottle of Camus and spend a lot of money and come out thinking they, you know, had a great time. And I'm sure they did. It's just not for me. I don't know. I'm looking for other things, you know. So we should probably switch gears here. You know, Thanksgiving's coming pretty quickly.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like, I think, a week and a half away or something like that. So maybe we should take a little break and, you know, give Smoking Out a little rest time.
So just to give some people some thoughts, we're going to take a break. But what came to mind to me when I knew we were recording today was Cornbread, mm-hmm. which Smokin' Al's does an incredible job with.
He does.
And my mind went to cornbread stuffing.
Oh, yeah.
I want to give you a few minutes to digest the thought, and then we'll hear about your different Thanksgiving tidbits.
Yeah, okay. We'll be back.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shordell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI AM and 104.7 WHLI FM, Long Island's own food, wine, and lifestyle show, with your host, Tom Shordell, chef, author, and restaurateur.
So, Thanksgiving had turned into one of my favorite holidays because it's kind of like, it's as, you know, culinarily as festive as Christmas can be without all the pressure of giving gifts and stuff, you know? So I kind of prefer it. I mean, there's something about that, the table, the Thanksgiving table, and gathering family around, and, you know, cool. I don't do it personally because I'm working. But
somebody was talking about Thanksgiving as a stressless holiday mm-hmm. because it's a holiday not involving gifts.
It's stressless unless you're cooking, you know. That meal is one pain in the ass to put together.
Well, that's interesting you say that there. Because I'll never forget when my buddy Joe from the radio station and I visited you at Mill River Club.
Yeah.
And you did a cooking demonstration of three different Thanksgiving side dishes. I believe one was tricolored carrots.
Yeah. I don't remember now. What was the others?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either. Why'd you bring it up?
But it was fascinating to see you on display in the kitchen. I mean, I've done that at Jewel because you had the open kitchen.
Yeah.
But this was really like hands-on.
Yeah, it was fun to do. I mean, somebody was told me I should get into that video thing on the internet. I just don't even know how to do it. And I don't have the energy to figure it out. But, you know, Thanksgiving to me is really about the sides. I mean, the turkey's the turkey. You either like it or you don't. You have some, you don't, whatever. But the sides are the most interesting part of the meal. I mean, you know, and, you know, you're only limited, again, by the season and your imagination. I mean, there are all kinds of vegetables out there that you can play with and, you know, all kinds of root vegetables and green vegetables. I mean, it's just, you know, an array of green beans. You have Brussels sprouts. You have turnips, carrots, potatoes, kale, you know, just spinach, broccoli, you know, cauliflower, tricolor cauliflower. It's amazing. As long as you don't have baby marshmallows, that's my only, you know, complaint about Thanksgiving. Somebody shows up with a marshmallow things, you know, I want to do to Jimmy Cagney, you know.
I'm coming with a string bean casserole.
String bean casserole. Tell me you're not putting Campbell's mushroom soup in there or whatever.
Of course,
yeah.
And some French's crunchy onions.
How can you get anything better than that?
I'm being sarcastic.
I know. It's, you know, I think the turkey is one thing. I mean, you know, brine the turkey, it's almost hard to go wrong. And, you know, brine is just water with sugar and salt and some herbs. It's easy to do. You know, look on the internet, they'll give you a million recipes. I'm not a big fan of the fried thing. I think that the fried turkey, you know, that craze has been going on for about 10 years, A, it's dangerous. I mean, every year you see one, you know, thing on the internet where somebody's setting a garage on fire, you know, with the turkey. Yeah, roasted, you know, you see, you know, also you can't make a gravy out of a friolator. So, you know, if you roast it, you're going to have those juices and stuff there that you can make a nice gravy with. So turkey's easy. I mean, you know, just you're going to put it in. I think most people leave it in too long. And that's where a kitchen thermometer comes in real handy. If you put that thermometer in the deepest part of the thigh and you get to like 160, 165, you're in good shape. The rest of the meal, though, that's the kicker, you know. You know, mashed potatoes is another thing that I think that people sometimes under-season. And they're a lot better when they have some, I think, herbal notes and or spice notes in them. And so when I make mashed potatoes, I like to use buttermilk because it has a little tang to it. And you know, when you're heating up your milk to, you know, to mash with your potatoes, I like to put rosemary and thyme in mine and a fair amount to get that flavor into the potatoes. I also use a lot of granulated garlic and a little bit of granulated onion in the potato. I think it gives it a little pop, and of course lots of butter. So try that the next time when you heat up your milk, put a couple of sprigs of rosemary in and a few sprigs of fresh thyme, and let that steep and get some of that flavor into your potatoes. I think you'll call me up and thank me for that.
You're gonna thank me for this one. Believe it or not, I Googled Tom Shawdell Thanksgiving side dishes, and it resides on the internet as a video.
Really?
Yeah.
What were they? Does it say?
I don't want to take time out to watch the video.
No, okay, all right. So I thought maybe it said something on it.
But
the other thing, too, is sweet potatoes, you know. Again, sweet potatoes is something that you can kind of overly sweeten and you know, with maple syrup and brown sugar and all the other things people put in. I like roasted bananas. I think you take roasted bananas and, you know, you peel them. You roast them first. You got to roast them in the skin, so they'll take maybe 20 minutes to get really soft, and peel the skin out, take that little black thing out of the bottom, and mash them and put them into your sweet potato, and then add your sugar, because the banana is going to give a certain sweetness to it too. So it's kind of fun to have that banana flavor in with your sweet potato.
Am I mistaken, though, some people put pineapple into their sweet potato?
Yeah, some people put pineapple on pizza. I mean, you know, it's crazy.
No.
Yeah, no, hard to believe. No, it's kind of yeah, I guess so. You know, I don't know if that's right, wrong, or indifferent. I know orange goes in there a lot. Some people put orange juice in a sweet potato. I kind of like the flavor of the potato better. But I think banana is a subtle sort of accoutrement that kind of marries.
So
well,
if you do that, I have a lot of problems buying bananas. It's the simple things in life. Usually, I'll get there, and they're all green, so that means I have to wait for them to ripen.
Wait, yeah.
But sometimes I get them, and they're too ripe. So in doing what you're saying for this sweet potato recipe,
right,
do the bananas have to be in a certain state of ripening?
No, I mean, you know, yellow bananas are always preferable to green, but if you put a green banana in the oven, leave it in long enough, it's going to wind up in the same shape as the yellow one, you know. You just got to cook it down to it's almost like a mush, you know. And once you add that in, it's a great little flavor enhancer to sweet potatoes, I think. And then if you want to add a little maple syrup, you know, it's not wrong. If you want to add a little brown sugar, you know, to your taste.
Maple syrup is another serious discussion. Do you use Aunt Jemima's or whatever the different brands are, or do you Log Cabin, or do you actually use maple syrup?
Well, most of those are imitation.
Those are pancake syrups?
Yeah, you know. I mean, it's artificially flavored. If you want to do that, go ahead. I mean, you know, real maple syrup would be the way to go, obviously. You know, did they bring Aunt Jemima back? I mean, they had her out for a while.
I don't know.
Wasn't she canceled for a while?
I'm not sure.
I think they brought her back, you know. I was always a fan. She was a kind of a comforting thing as a kid. It was Aunt Jemima. Okay, we got syrup. Cool, I'll make pancakes, you know. I was allowed to do that once I was about 7 or 8 years old. You know? We had that electric griddle that, you know, opened up. You know? It's like the early George Foreman stuff. Anyway, good stuff. But yeah, and then, you know, a lot of this stuff, you know, I'm kind of a purist when it comes to vegetables and flavors, you know, green beans or I'm not a casserole guy. I think that, you know, and that's fine if you want to do that. It's, there's nothing wrong with it. But the other thing that I love around Thanksgiving, my grandmother used to make it, was she would take yellow turnips and whip them. She'd boil them down. She'd whip them with a little sugar and butter. And great flavor. And you know, there's the modern snack bar out by me, out in, I guess it's Aquabog. They serve, I think he said they serve something like 2,500 pounds of turnips every Thanksgiving. You know, in a couple of days leading up to it, they only people that make mashed turnips, and they just make them by the ton. It's crazy. But that's another great flavor. And parsnips is another one that, that people don't use enough. I think that you can take, you know, you can take parsnips and dice them down with carrots and, you know, caramelize them, cook them a little, you know, steam them off or boil them off, get them soft and caramelize them with a little butter in a pan. And you have mixed root vegetables. You can put potato, carrots, and parsnips. The other thing that I like to do is I like to steam them or, you know, if at home, if you don't have a steamer, you can boil them. Once they're really soft, you drain them, dry them out a little bit in the oven, and then whip them in a food processor with butter and a little bit of sugar and salt. And instead of mashed potatoes, you have this mashed, you know, parsnip thing that's much more flavorful than potatoes. You can do the same thing with carrots, and you do the same thing with butternut squash. If you roast the butternut squash and get it, you know, so it's soft and you put it in the Robocoup or the Cuisinart and do a little butter in there and some salt and pepper, you have a real cool side dish. It's mashed up, you know, and it's colorful too. It's, you know, I think that the Thanksgiving plate should be like an array of colors of fall. You know, you have the brown gravy with the brown leaves, and you have green beans and the evergreen trees, and you have the orange, you know, for the foliage that, that turns color there with the butternut squash, and it's just a beautiful plate. And then I'd like to chastise the people that buy the canned cranberry sauce. Because cranberry sauce is so easy to make, you know, and apples and canned applesauce is, again, it's so easy to make. You know, the applesauce is basically just, you know, if you peel apples and dice them down and put them on a very slow fire, it becomes applesauce. You don't even have to do anything except stir it once in a while. If the apples are really dry, you may add a little apple juice just so they don't burn. But it's really easy. And then you can check the sugar content. I mean, some apples, like if you use Honey Crisps, you know, they may have enough sugar content in them where you don't have to add any. Granny Smith's, which I like to use, need a little sugar because they're very tart. But that kind of thing should be, you know, I don't know. I think you should make those fresh. The same thing with, cranberry sauce. I mean, it's another easy thing to make. It's just basically cranberries and sugar. And you need a lot of sugar because cranberries are really tart. But you can add a little orange juice in there or a little orange zest or, you know, whatever you want to, you know, however you want to season it. But I think it's just, if you just use the cranberry, the fresh cranberry, you know, the dried cranberries, if they're fresh, they come in a bag, you know, a bunch of sugar, a little bit of salt, you're good, you know, and it's way better than the canned stuff.
So this might be interesting by interpretation because I didn't buy canned cranberry sauce. I went to Trader Joe's and got the cranberry orange, cranberry relish, and it was in a plastic.
Well, that's acceptable. At least they're making it. You know, it's not that canned stuff where you open up both sides of the can and you push it out and it comes out in a can shape with even the, you know, the indentations around, the rings around it. You know, you slice it off. I guess it's okay, but, you know, I don't know, use a little effort. It doesn't take much. And believe me, I get it. I realize how much work, you know, people put into Thanksgiving dinner. But the people who love to do it, love to do it. I know Val makes a big, Thanksgiving dinner for her family every year, and she, you know, basically enjoys it. And I'm like, I make a big Thanksgiving dinner for 300-400 people every year, and I don't enjoy it. I mean, it's a nightmare of a meal to make when you're in a restaurant because you're doing so much volume. It's crazy. But it's funny how, you know, more people are going out than ever before. I remember when I had Cool Fish and, you know, we were always closed on Thanksgiving. I said, I wonder what would happen if we opened, you know. And I'm thinking, well, we're a seafood restaurant. Is anybody going to come? And we did like 300 or 400 dinners. It was nuts, you know. was one of the busier days of the year. And I was like, wow, I guess people are just, you know, tired of cooking at home. Or if it's a couple, you know, you got two people, it's hard to make a, what are you going to do? Are you going to get a, you know, 14-pound turkey or something? I mean, you're going to have turkey sandwiches for the next month and a half. So I think it's easier, and the cleanup is tough, you know. So it's just easier to kind of go out and, you know, you go, you have your dinner, you leave, and, you know, no problems.
I was listening to some people talk about Thanksgiving, and they were trying to figure out, they weren't in a position to be cooking, and they were looking for a catered version, and they were talking Stu Leonard's, they were talking
Zorn's, right?
Zorn's, and then you get also talking about, do you just get it whole, or do you get it carved up?
I don't know. I mean, it depends on your knife skills, I guess. You know, we do a lot of takeout stuff. excuse me, for Thanksgiving, you know, people pick up a whole bird or they pick up a bunch of sides or gravy or whatever. And I guess it lightens the load a little bit for whoever's cooking, you know, which is certainly understandable. And it's, you know, to me, it's kind of, you know, I think if you're going to have it home and you're pressed for time, you know, that's a good way to go. You know, there's all those, what's the place up in... what's that town? Albertson or whatever.
Kitchen Cabaret.
Kitchen Cabaret. I mean, they must do 1,000 turkeys, man. I mean, it's crazy at the holidays up there. You
know? The craziest Thanksgiving story I ever heard was when I lived in Bayside, there was the Bay Terrace Shopping Center, and there was Cake Box was a bakery,
right.
And right next door was Bell Appetizing, the old school Jewish soul food, you know, smoked fishes and stuff. But they did a lot of catering, and to be honest, not quite sure why somebody would go to a smoked fish store for Thanksgiving turkey. But my understanding was that they used the
is it kosher thing.
Could
it be kosher turkeys?
Well, but they used the bakery to cook the turkeys, if I'm not mistaken. The bakery had that
bigger
rotating.
Ovens. Yeah, sure.
And that's my recollection. Maybe it's a fantasy, but I don't think it is.
Were they owned by the same people?
No, but they were just next
neighbors?
Door.
Yeah.
But
that's pretty funny.
But my eternal search is for the right gravy. My mom...
You got to make it, Stu.
Yeah, I know, but my mom sort of pushes herself to get everything done.
Yeah.
In the day, she used to make giblet gravy, but now she... it's like the only corner she tries to cut.
Yeah, well, that's a pain in the neck, you know?
And to be honest, I learned that not all brown gravies are turkey gravies. Like if you go to a diner, most of the time the brown gravy is used for turkey and or meat. That's what I'm led to believe.
There's a 55-gallon drum downstairs with a pump handle.
So I end up again going to either Stu Leonard's or Zorn's or just searching for the perfect.
Well, I would think Zorn's has a pretty good handle on it. I mean, they do the poultry is their thing, you know. So I would think that you know. But, you know, gravy's made in a pan. I mean, it's kind of, you can do it. You can make a sauce, you know, but the gravy has to be made in a pan. And that's, you're basically scraping up the bits of, you know, stuff that's stuck to the bottom of the pan where all the flavor is. The French refer to that as fond, F-O-N-D. And that's where your flavor comes from. You know, whenever I cook a turkey, if you don't put some kind of liquid in the bottom, I use chicken stock or whatever, you know, it's going to burn. Your vegetables are going to burn. It's going to give an acrid taste to your gravy, you know. But between the juices of the turkey that are emanating from the bird and, you know, a little bit of the vegetables and all of that stuff, you can come up with something really good. And don't hesitate to, don't be shy with the herbs, you know. Use some rosemary, use some fresh thyme, you know. It makes all the difference.
When I think of a full holiday dinner, butternut squash, Brussels sprouts,
yeah.
You mentioned the turnips.
Yeah, turnips, green beans, broccoli. It's all in play, man. You know, all these fall vegetables that are around now. You know, it's it should be, you know, if you're going to.
What
gonna
about
do
peas?
It once, peas are a spring thing.
Oh.
But I think if you're going to do it, you know, do it. You know, have this abundance of, you know, I picture the Thanksgiving table just crammed with stuff, you know?
Oh, my God. My memory is depleting. So I tease the audience with cornbread stuffing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What are you going to say about that?
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, you know, cornbread, I think you have to use a little bread with the cornbread stuffing, a little bit of, you know, regular bread toasted, because otherwise it gets too mushy.
So I can't cheat and go to Smokin' Al's and get 12 mini loaves of...
Yeah, you can do that.
And then stuff... My mom's still old school. She stuffs it right into the turkey carcass.
Yeah, but you got to do something. You can't just take the loaf and take a running start and hope that the cavity's open and push it in. You know, you got to kind of... Yeah, you know, you want some onions in there, some celery in there. You want some herbs in there, even bacon. I mean, you know, it's bacon adds a little bit to it. You want some sage in there, some fresh sage, you know, to give you that Thanksgiving flavor. Chicken stock.
There was some foolish thing 20 years ago, yodel stuffing or something, or Twinkie stuffing.
Well, I never knew that. Twinkies, I grew up on. I mean, I love Twinkies, but they're not the same anymore. I don't know if it's because I'm older, my palate changed, but something changed with the recipe.
That's funny. I had a Hostess cupcake the other day. I don't know why. They had a special flavor or something, so I had to buy it, and I was going to give it to my granddaughter, but it didn't get there. I ate it.
Listen, there was a time.
And it tasted good.
There was a time when I was trying to become a better pastry chef. It's not really my forte. I'm okay at it. I'm not very good at it. So I decided, as a nostalgia thing, I was going to do a Hostess tasting plate. And I made Twinkies. I made the Hostess cupcake with the swirly white thing on the top. I made a yodel. And I made a snowball. All in miniature. And I served them on the same plate as a Hostess tasting plate. The problem I had was, if they didn't sell in the first day and a half or 2 days, I didn't have the chemicals, preservatives that Hostess has, you know? So they would get, like, old and I couldn't use them, you know? And so sometimes I would have a flurry of them, and, you know, I would, and people, oh, wow, it reminds me of my childhood. I mean, yeah, that's what it was supposed to do, you know, evoke that memory. But I couldn't keep them fresh enough, long enough to really, it was a good idea gone completely off the rails, you know. I found myself having to make them every other day, which was a pain in the neck, you know, I had other things to do. But I thought it was kind of a cool thing. And Gennady, Peter Gennady, who was, I haven't spoken to in years, he's retired from Newsday now, he was a food critic. He said to me, you know, that was a really cool idea you had, you know. I said, well, were yours soft? He goes, yeah, thank God, you know. But they would turn quicker because they didn't have a very long shelf life. But I think everybody remembers Hostess. I mean, you know, I remember going to, there was a little deli on Old Country Road. I used to run up there and we would buy the Hostess cherry pies, the Hostess Twinkies, you know.
Yeah, you had the cherry pie. I think it was probably three versions. I think cherry, apple,
blueberry,
and maybe lemon or something.
Maybe lemon. I think there's a blueberry too.
But yeah, that stuff... But as the world changes also, for some reason, now they're miniature versions of what they were.
Yeah, just, I don't know, recipes change. It was, you know, Twinkies, I've heard other people say it. Twinkies just aren't the same. But there was that the three holes in the bottom where they would shoot the cream in, you know, you'd bite each hole to get the cream. It was just fabulous.
So that's interesting. The other night I was, and I don't do this often, but I was on the internet, looking at some Facebook reels or whatever, and there was a bakery that was showing how to how they inject jelly into a jelly donut.
Oh, yeah.
And I really never stopped to think about it.
Put the donut on top and hit the button and shoot.
Yeah, but, like, that's easy.
Mm-hmm.
And a normal bakery, I don't think, does a lot of jelly donuts.
Generally not.
But
it's a Dunkin' Donut.
Day in, day out. Dunkin' Donuts, Munchkins. Oh, my God. It must be crazy to just, they must have to do 1,000 Munchkins, fill them with jelly.
Yeah, well, it's you know, you pop them in, they're like candy, you know, to them. Yeah, sugar. It's you know, sugar is an addictive thing. I mean, I'm trying to break my sugar habit as we speak. It's not easy, you know, because it's in everything you eat. You know, I mean, everywhere you look, there's sugar in something. You know?
But let me ask you something. I'm really into the jelly in a jelly donut.
Yeah.
So, first of all, I think it's like unbelievable that, you know, you can just squirt jelly into the donut and it just makes a cavity for it. It's not like, you know.
Well, it's not concrete. I mean, you know, it's pretty soft.
But, you know, how much jelly should be in a jelly donut?
I don't know. I think if you're going to err, you want to err on the heavy side. You know, because you're calling it a jelly donut, so you're expecting some, you know. There's nothing worse than biting into, like, a, you know, one that's been sitting around a while, you know, and you don't get enough jelly in it. It's like, ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did we even get on this?
I don't know, but my friend Joe from Dunkin' Donuts and the member of the Undistinguished Gentleman gang that hangs out with me, I think he's going to be mad at me with this next statement.
Uh-oh.
Guess how many calories in a munchkin?
I'd say 600.
No, a munchkin.
300?
65 calories in a munchkin.
Is it really?
So that means there's like 200 calories gone if you do three donuts with your coffee.
Yeah, you can't count calories because you'll be depressed. I mean, you know, if you take an average sandwich, I don't know, let's say it's 1,000 calories. I mean, you have to walk from here to Cleveland to get rid of that, you know?
Yeah, it's easy to gain, hard to lose.
Totally, tell me about it, I know. Yeah, I've decided that sugar is my enemy now. I've been eating a lot of it for a long time because I'm a chocolate freak. And I'm around it all the time, so it's easy, you know. I pick up, you know, we do these little apple crumb tarts, you know, and, you know, they're there, you know what I mean? So just, you get the craving, and I don't even eat the whole thing. I'll break it in half and give the other half to the pastry chef or whatever. But I'm trying to break that out. I got to lose about 10 pounds.
So in just trying to recap my week last week, I ended up going to a steak restaurant the other night. I was up at Hendricks in the village, Old Roslyn.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And there was an interesting appetizer.
What'd they have?
They had a Kobe hot dog.
That's quite the appetizer.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was like a foot-long hot dog.
At a foot-long, yeah.
It tasted good. They served it with ketchup, mustard, and sauerkraut. I know you're not the biggest fan of them putting the ketchup on the plate.
I think you should be incarcerated if you serve ketchup.
But I thought it was novel and unique, and everybody enjoyed it.
I can't imagine eating a foot-long hot dog as an appetizer. You know, it's...
Well, we whacked it up. It was four of us.
Yeah, no, I get it. It feeds a family of six. We had a guy, I don't know if I told you the story, we had, ever tell you about Two Meal Neil?
Two Meal, was he in the mafia?
No, Two Meal Neil was, he lived in Garden City, and I was helping a friend of mine out with a restaurant over there, and the waitress comes in, and she has an order for four people, right, and she has the appetizers and the entrees, and now it comes for dessert, she orders one brownie sundae, one chocolate flourless cake, one banana cream pie, and one lamb rack. And I'm thinking, what is she doing here? You know, she's got this thing screwed up. So I call her back in the kitchen. I said, what's with the lamb rack? You got dessert order here. He goes, no, that's what he wants for dessert. I said, what? He says, yeah, he wants a lamb rack for dessert. Anyway, I said, okay, I sent it out, right? Subsequently, I met him. Name is Neil. And he goes, yeah, and he's a big guy, you know. He goes, I don't eat dessert, so I usually have another entree. I'm a big guy, I eat a lot of food, you know. So he became Two Meal Neil, and every time Two Meal Neil came in, he would have, you know, what is he having for dessert? He's having New York strip, or he's having, you know, halibut or whatever. It was hilarious. And I used to save the dupes because they were funny. And, you know, you have three desserts and a lamb rack. It was hilarious.
Anyway. That's why I had a client that sort of did that. I used to take him out to Popeye's, a dear friend who's gone too early, Mike. From Antique Equities. We used to go to Popeye's in Bethpage, and he would insist on getting a 2-pound lobster and a 2-pound piece of steak.
Yeah, well, it's on your dime. Of course, yeah. Yeah, Neil was an interesting guy. He had a seat on a stock exchange or something, And he made a big trade, millions of dollars, and then wound up just retiring at like 32 or something ridiculous. And he uses all that money. He's really a big philanthropist. He lives out in Southold now. And, you know, it's all kids' stuff. It's all children, diseases, child problems, whatever. He's huge. He does fundraisers every year, donates a lot of money. He's one of those really good souls that, you know, just wants to help. He uses all his wealth to help other people. It's an amazing thing to watch. But he could eat. It was a two-meal meal. Hats off to you, bud.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was great.
So just wrapping up this Kobe hot dog at Hendrick's. So they prepare it like a pig in a blanket. You know, so it's not a roll. It's a what do you call that?
A blanket.
A blanket.
It was in a blanket. Yeah, it's rolled up in it comes out rolled in a blanket. Okay. Yeah, puff pastry dough or something
yeah.
like that. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I would never think of serving a foot-long hot dog.
So just to take a minute to talk about Hendrick's. So it was a very nice meal there. It was very crazy crowded on a Saturday night. I felt like I was doing the early bird special because the people we went with insisted on getting a 6:30 reservation.
Yikes.
I would have gone a little later.
Yeah, yeah.
But packed. Again, you know, the normal steak restaurant has steak, you know, lobster, chicken, or whatever.
Sure.
But they had chicken parmesan, short rib, bunch of other things. The salads in today's world are crazy, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a wedge guy or a Caesar guy, and they got quinoa and whatever.
That's too healthy for you.
Too healthy.
Give me some blue cheese crumbles.
Then we had, it was interesting because, you know, you go out with a group, we had to have two different types of broccoli. You know, one with the garlic, and because I guess it was sauteed, but one with garlic, one without garlic. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, Hendrick's, you know, Paul Brothers, they run great places. I mean, you know, they're smart guys. They've built an empire here on Long Island and in Florida, right? And in Westchester, too, they have a place. They do a great job. I mean, yeah, hats off to them. They're good operators, and, they know their clientele. They have great locations, you know. I mean, being in the mall over there to Manhasset doesn't hurt. But I enjoy their places, and you know, I like both of them very much. I mean, I know George better than I know his brother. Gillis, but you know, good guys, always nice to me. You know, I have nothing but respect for them. You know, great operators. Anyway, it's about that time, Sue. We almost have to get out of here. So, you know, the last thing I want to say about Thanksgiving is, you know, and I'm sure I don't have to coach people into this, but don't forget dessert. Dessert is very important. You know, but nobody makes mincemeat pie anymore. You ever notice?
Thank God.
Yeah, there used to be meat in it, you know, 100 years ago. That's how it got the name. But then, you know, they removed that, and it's raisins and, you know, brown sugar and that kind of thing. But, yeah, you don't see it as much anymore. I remember my grandmother used to make it once in a while. But now...
what's that other crazy pie? Rutabaga?
Oh, sweet potato pie? Rutabaga pie? I don't know. I never had that.
Rutabaga is a vegetable?
Yeah, it's a vegetable. Rutabaga is like a turnip.
Oh.
Anyway, yeah, all those, you know, it's nice to have an array of stuff, apple, pumpkin, you know. But don't skimp on the chocolate. You know, get some chocolate.
So, wait, just real quick, the different pies, isn't there something that has like a reddish color that's, and not blueberry?
Rhubarb?
Rhubarb.
Yeah, yeah. Rhubarb's a spring thing, but they probably have it. You know, there's that place out in North Fork there, Brymere's. If you really want a good pie, you know, Brymere's is a place to go. They have a selection of probably 30, 40 different pies, you know.
And the pies are probably $30, $40.
Well, yeah, it's, you know, probably more than that. You know, it's getting up there. Everything's getting up there. Anyway, with that, we're going to have to sign off. Tom's Three Keys to Life. Life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last. Keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza. And start thinking about that Thanksgiving menu.
And you have your last chance to ask Tom a question about Thanksgiving. Fire at WHLI. .com, fire at WHLI.com, and hopefully next week Tom will answer the question and it will be timely enough for Thanksgiving.
Yes, do that.
Come on now, everybody, get ready for a treat. It's time for stepping out for something mighty good to eat.
looking for atmosphere. Well, they got it happening here. They're doing barbecue the way it ought to be. Bring your sister, brother, significant other. Bring all your pals. There's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.
Ribtober keeps on smoking. Mention Playing with Fire and enjoy Al's famous baby back rib dinner any Monday through Friday until 7 p.m. for just $14.99. That's right, a baby back dinner for just $14.99. Dinner includes a choice of a half rack baby backs or Al's famous barbecue pulled pork or chicken, a side and cornbread, all for just $14.99. 22 years, it's still Long Island's favorite barbecue. Smoking Al's, Massapequa Park. For details, call 516-799-4900. And remember, there's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.
There's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.
Proud sponsor of Playing with Fire. Sundays at 9 a.m. on the new 104.7 WHLI.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints. Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right Rug.